Welcome to Blueprints for Brilliance Coaching Insights, a podcast by coaches for coaches. Our guests share their hard-won wisdom to help you grow your coaching business and create a life of success. So get ready to unlock the blueprints to your success. Welcome everyone to today's episode. I'm thrilled that you joined me today, and I'm also thrilled to have Susan Day all the way from Australia. She is an arts therapist and an art coach, so I'm excited to hear more about that. So welcome to the show, Susan. It's lovely to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's so lovely to be here.
Let's start out telling everyone a little bit about you and your journey and how did you become an art therapist?
So I've always been drawing. I've always been writing. And I had various careers. I used to be a teacher and an English major, all sorts of stuff like that. And I was living in a country, small country town, and somebody asked me to edit their thesis. Actually been rejected because the English was so poor. And it was about art therapy. My gosh, this is a thing? You can do it. Like, it's about 100 years old, so I've taken a bit while to catch up. It was one of those moments, and I was like, I get this. I don't know anything about it. I didn't know. I assumed it was really complex, and it kind of is in some layers. It's a little bit like a pyramid approach. You can do a few marks on a piece of paper, but underneath there's these layers and layers and layers of stuff happening. Yeah, so it just really spoke to me, and I've always been interested in meditation and mindfulness. And for me, the more I learned about art therapy, the more I realized that you need to be in a mindful state to get the best out of it. You don't have to be. So I just felt the two were just married together beautifully.
I love that. So how long have you been doing it?
That's 7 or 8 years. Yeah.
Okay, I can't believe that it started with you editing a thesis. That's just so serendipitous.
Yeah, absolutely, isn't it? Yeah. It was just this moment of... And the lady was very funny. She's very casual. You know, she was like, oh, you know, and I was reading this stuff and I edited it. And you know, as you do when you edit, you pull things apart. And I said, I hope you don't mind. And she loved it. She was great. And she got a pass. And yeah, but it was just this, oh my gosh, you can use art not only to heal yourself, which I think most artists and most people who understand art do, but also you can use it to help others. And people who, you don't even have to like art. You don't even have to be good at art to really benefit from it.
I actually have two kids who are artistic. One is at a small private university for the arts, and he's actually in illustration. And the other one is she's leaving this Saturday to start university, and she is in the arts program. She wants to study sculpture.
Two very worthy modalities.
Yeah, it's so interesting, though, the classes they get to take. I mean, it's not just... you know, whatever they're doing, you know, illustration, what I say, sculpture, but get to do so many other really interesting things. The first year, they always have them try out all different modalities just to see, you know, there might be something else that jumps out at you. Tell me about art therapy. What kind of people come to you? What kind of people do you help? How do you help them? You know, you mentioned you put two lines on a piece of paper, you know, how do you interpret that?
So I tend to work at either end of the spectrum of age. So predominantly teenagers as well, particularly terrible issues with anxiety, but also work with older women. And they're my focus in many ways, because we brought our families up, we've made all these sacrifices, and now it's time for us to find ourselves. In Australia, there's a phenomenon they call the silver splinters, which is where older people, once the kids have left home and everything's happened, suddenly a couple might decide they don't really like each other anymore. They separate. And this puts women at a terrible financial disadvantage, but also an emotional one as well. They're the two extremes. I do obviously work with people in between, but on the whole, it's women in the over 50 and sort of preteens and the early teens, that sort of areas.
So when they come to you, let's start with the teens. You know, where do you start with them?
It's really difficult, actually. I was talking to a coach here in Australia, and I said to her, one of the most difficult things about working with teens is they're usually not made to come, but they're usually encouraged to come, and they can be quite defensive, and they're obviously very suspicious and a bit worried, and, you know, who's this strange woman and why does she like pencils so much? And yeah, like, most of the adults in my life are not that keen on paint, but this woman, she's crazy. It's not like when an adult comes to you, they you know, might have paid their money. They want to listen and they want your help. And so there's a lot of, I guess, there's a kind of a lot of dancing around, not a dancing around, but you have to skirt around certain things. So yesterday, for example, I had a young lady and I said, how did you go? Like, we work on Zoom, work online a lot. And she said, I can't tell you, it's a secret. Because she done. And I said, okay, that's fine. And that's cool. She also has moments where she turns the screen off. Whereas an adult probably wouldn't do that. She says, you know, she needs to, whatever's happening. And so I could be talking to a blank screen. So they're the major differences I find, is that obviously adults much more engaged, much more interested, and they want you to tell a movie, but the teens are a bit like, oh, I don't know about this, you know.
That totally makes sense. And from having, not long ago had teenagers, I can totally understand that. And them turning off the screen and stuff. And as mine were in school during COVID, the horror stories they tell about the kids who weren't even in the room and just turned their cameras off, but they were allegedly there. How do you choose what type of, I don't know, instruments you use, color? How does the art part come into the therapy?
I suppose essentially, if we keep in mind that art therapy is not about producing a piece of artwork, it's not about producing something you might hang on the wall. I always encourage people to keep a journal because they can see the progressive stages they've been through. But if you want to chuck it away, if you want to rip it up and burn it, you do that too, because that can be very cathartic. Yes, I can. There are different materials and mediums that I would use for different conditions. So broadly, somebody who's suffering from anxiety, they might be quite heightened. The breath is very short, so definitely start with a guided meditation. That I will write in a way that it leads them into the first or the theme of the session. Every session has a theme. And also, so we might look at using things like color pencils or gel pens. Take a little bit, you have to slow down to use them. That's what I'm trying to say. So like gel pens are fabulous. You get that beautiful sort of uniform, bright, thick color, but you have to use them slowly. So we do that with breath work as well. So you take a nice long deep breath. And you might just then begin to color something just very, very slowly. It just brings a whoosh, your nervous system down. On the other hand, you might have somebody who's depressed or feeling very blue and use color. And so you might use paint. So paint moves quickly, it's fluid, there's a lovely sort of textural experience with it. It's very you get you. So that can lift your mood. That can make you actually feel better. And as for colors, do tend to guide people a little bit. So obviously we have cool colors and warm colors. So all your listeners will know that, red is a vibrant, powerful color as opposed to blue, which is calming color. Every color has a positive and a negative as well. So if you're working, say, again, with somebody who's feeling a bit down or a bit depressed, then we use the warm colors, the yellows, orange, reds, to sort of lift their mood a little bit. And, I have a painting over here that I created using yellows, because and it actually hits when I see it. It actually just slightly lifts my mood a little and helps me refocus. It's very, very powerful. There are many, many art therapy activities where you allow the client to choose a color because it has to resonate with them, and that tells me where they're sitting emotionally, particularly preteens and teenagers who may not have the words to say, oh, "I'm feeling a bit down today," or "I'm frustrated about this," or "I'm scared. I don't know what to do. I'm scared," and they don't. They don't have those words, but the psychology, the subconscious is screaming out.
How do, if you're working on Zoom with someone, do you tell them ahead of time, get yourself some watercolors and we're going to use them?
So I have everything planned out, and I said, so next week we're going to work with modeling clay. We might work with collage. If we're in studio, if someone's coming to me, it's a lot. In many respects, it's a lot. It gives me a lot more to work with because I've got all sorts of different kinds of paper. I've got all sorts of different materials, and I can just pop them out and work with them. Went off online and with distance, but to be honest, I haven't noticed that it's a real disadvantage to the client. Because they get what they get out of it.
I'm so grateful for people like you who can help people who need, especially teens. Like you said, with them, they don't know how to speak and say, but they can draw and can, like you said, I'm assuming that can calm them down and they can some breathing and then maybe they can articulate it better. Is that what you find?
Oh, absolutely. Feel better. No, like, and even within, and it doesn't take a particularly long time. A lot of art therapy works alongside traditional talk therapists, whether counselling and psychologists or other modalities as well. And what it does is it bypasses that need to verbalise something to explain. It's got to be a certain part of your brain. And often we don't have words. Trauma can block it. Trauma can just overwhelm. We get that freeze. That flight or freeze, fawn, all those sorts of things happening. But if you're not being confronted, if you're not asked to explain, how do you feel today? You're like, oh, I don't know, I'm tired, this happened, I'm a bit excited. Your subconscious will express that through color, mind. So things you may ask, if we're working with somebody who's been bullied, for example, might ask them to paint the bully. And usually at the beginning of the session, the bully might be a shape. Doesn't that necessarily have to be, but it'll fill the page. or if it's at the top of the page, or if it's at the bottom of the page, when you ask them to add themselves, where they put that figure or shape on the page matters. How the size of it on the, it's really, really interesting stuff.
Oh, that's
And you can see that transform even a matter of weeks.
so tell me if you would some of your favorite stories or some really amazing transformations from when someone came to you and then when they left you. And obviously, we don't need names.
So there was an older lady I've been working with just casually, more than anything. One of the things I'm really, it's really piqued my interest is older women who are now being identified as being on the spectrum. They're autistic in some form, whether it's ADHD, leads on to all sorts of issues, whether it's full-blown autism. And a lady in particular who's 72 years old has just been diagnosed with autism. And all of a sudden, her life suddenly made sense. Why she can't communicate people, why she doesn't like doing, and I've actually in the same boat. I can't cope with supermarkets. It's too busy. It's just too much happening. There's all this thing shouting at me from the shelves. It's just like, no. It's something now that researchers are actually looking at because autism has been defined by young teenage boys who behave in a certain way, whereas girls don't. It's quite different. And now they're suddenly realizing that there's been a lot of women in the 50s, 60s, and like this lady in her 70s who just had been slipped through the net, who could have even, and we're not talking about great financial support or medical support, but just a little bit of an understanding that my brain is not quite ticking over the ways other people's are. And maybe that's why I don't fit into, and this may be why I can't do this particular job. So for me, for example, I probably have more jobs than most people in the world because I go, I'm quite curious. I'm like, oh, I wonder how that works. And so I just go, I'll try that now. And I don't have a fear of failure because my sense of curiosity just overwhelms that. And it's just sort of so really interesting that we see these people now. And of course, what art therapy can do, and as a coach or therapist, is we can use the art materials to express a sense of loss and sort of from that develop through to a sense of empowerment. And of course, my main goal is always to build emotional resilience, whether that's in a 15-year-old or a 72-year-old, because that's that ability to bounce back, to process things that go wrong, everything, because everything goes wrong for everybody, and being able to overcome that and say, you know what, that's just the way the world is, but I'm okay. And
Yeah.
I can paint it out. Paint it out.
I love that. Paint it out. My son is, we actually, we laugh, my business partner and I said, any entrepreneur is probably has some kind of form of ADD or ADHD
Absolutely.
because we're like, and we can do that. But my son does have it, and he does have trouble sometimes when it's too loud in a restaurant or too much going on, too noisy. And he's like, I'd really like to not stay here. Can we move
I
on?
mean, but now we have noise cancelling headphones. I used to run an art therapy class because I've just moved one side of the state to the other, and a lady used to come with her noise cancelling headphones. And some of the other people would look at her and think, why she got headphones on? She can still hear me, but it shuts out a lot of that movement noise. Yeah. I walked into other people's houses and gone, geez, the TV's a bit loud. And I just stuck looking at me. What's going on? I'm having an argument at the moment with the windscreen wipers in my Mazda. It's like, no, they're too loud. It's just like, oh.
I don't know if you're going to win that one unless you get new ones. Brilliant. So tell me a little bit about what favorite ritual do you have to help keep you grounded and able to work with people who, in some ways are like you, but in other ways are struggling.
I really like doodling. I've actually researched that. I wrote a big article about that on my website. And I find I like to work with just pens as well. Sometimes I have a dedicated art time once a week, which is usually Sunday afternoon, where I listen to an audio book. And I have no idea half the time what I'm going to create or paint. Last week it was an avocado. I mean, who knew? Right? And I was like,
Then you have to do some guacamole after that, right?
that's right. The Doritos. It's really interesting, and I go, no, I need, and whatever I do, obviously it's significant. And when you're busy, I don't often have time to go understand it myself in some ways. But it for me, it's an emotional release. It's a time being creative. It's just being creative itself is really good for your mental health. And it comes back to that need to play. And play therapy is really important as well. And you know, we need to give as adults, we need to give ourselves that space to, you know, it just to play and be creative. And it perhaps even a bit silly. I don't think enough people do that. It's, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was funny. We used to get, when I was a kid, we had paint by numbers, right?
Yeah.
But now they have like really beautiful, like famous art pieces, and you can get them on a canvas, and it's the number, they're numbered. So
Yes, exactly.
we would just sit there. My daughter and I would just sit there and paint in these teeny tiny little pieces. But it was very therapeutic. It was lovely.
It's a lovely thing to share as well. And you worked with a gentleman who had an acquired brain injury from he fell off a horse, and he and I watched what he was drawing, and it was very, very controlled, almost very, very tense, you might say. And everything happened at the bottom of the page like this. And he said, and I was a bit unsure, and I thought, oh, I don't think he might get to start complaining. But he looked at me, and his face was full of joy, and he went, "I haven't done this since I was at school." And then he says to me, "Why do we stop doing that?" And I think that's a really, really good question. You know, there are very few. Not, your family would be, I assume, the exception, but there are very few people who continue to draw and do art as they get older because they're off to uni, they've got families, they need to get a job, and important stuff, you know.
Actually, it wasn't all that long ago that I started doing Legos again.
Wow.
How much fun are Legos? And they have these sets now. They're actually not Lego brand, but they have like lights in them. And I just did one that was, it was a garden center, and I have one that's a
Oh, nice.
cafe, and they've got plants in them. And it's fun. But I almost have to force myself sometimes, like you. I love the idea of having a dedicated art time, because like you, I almost have to force myself to do it because I don't feel, I don't know, entitled to do that. Like I
Yeah.
should be doing something else. I should be
Yeah,
doing
that's right.
laundry
Yeah,
or
you
the
should be mowing the
dishes.
lawns, and yeah, that's right, getting the dishes done. Yeah. No. No.
All right. Well, just because we talked today, I'm going to have a dedicated art time at least once a week, if not more often.
It can just be 5 minutes. Yeah. And sometimes if we establish a ritual around that, that really works as well. So you might light a candle. You might, there's a program I'm working on at the moment where people get up, people with you know, sort of deep emotional issues and psychology issues. You might get up and just draw a lines across a paper, all you do. And as you do, you take a deep breath in, and as you draw the line, you exhale very slowly, and and that's all you do. So creating a ritual is like, as an artist would know that already, because they'll get their paints ready, all that. So artists already know they have it. Well, they may not be conscious of it, but they will start to prep their stuff, whether it's getting the paints ready or the clay ready, or, you know, figure out where they're going to work. And that's where, you know, you'll have a studio and everything around you. But, you know, for everyday people, that's a really important aspect as well, to being creative and releasing whatever tension, you know, you need to do. And I worked with very, very troubled teens for a few years, and I found that my art was very jagged. It was, you know, I was had all this tension. You know, but it got it out of my system. And in a lot of the ways, that's what you need to do that almost immediately when you're dealing with in these situations. And then it gives you space to process as well. Yeah.
I love that. Oh, I just love what you do. It's amazing, and it's doing so many good things for so many people. I want to ask you, if people are listening, thinking, wow, I've got someone in my family who could use that, or I know someone who could really use Susan's help. What is the best way for them to reach out to you?
You can find me on all the socials. My website's mindfulartstherapy.com. There's a contact form there, or, you know, if you look at Mindful Arts Therapy on Facebook or Instagram in particular, you can reach me. I'd love to hear from people as well. I have books available on Amazon, and last year I developed the art therapy app.
I love that. Okay, last question for you that I ask all my guests. If you could give the world one tip to make it a better place, what would that be?
Oh, I know this one. Take back the crayons. I had a lady, and I was working with her, and you know, we were talking about she was, oh, I don't know what I'm doing, and what's this art therapy stuff? And by the time of it, I'd finished, she went, you know what? I'm going downstairs. I'm taking back that crayons from those 4-year-olds, and I'm getting. So, I loved it. I thought that's just so brilliant. Yeah. So, you know, we enjoy your art, enjoy it, and take it back and reclaim that beautiful child within you that loved to paint. I mean, kids know about art. They love it. They do it on the walls. They do it everywhere. It doesn't matter. It's just,
I love that. What a great way to end. Take back the crayons. And with that, I will thank you so much, Susan Day, for joining me today. And I am excited to check out all of your socials for people to hear this and be inspired. So thank you.
you very much for having me. It was such a joy.
Thanks for joining us today on Blueprints for Brilliance Coaching Insights. We hope you're leaving this episode with inspiration to take your coaching business and your life to the next level. If you found value in this episode, we would love it if you would subscribe and share it with someone else who you think might benefit from hearing it. Thanks, and we'll see you in the next episode.